Chairman Parker, members of the board, Commissioner Mercer, good morning. I'm Bruce Taylor from the town of Sweden. My comments will be in regard to the basis statement and also to the proposed changes in Chapter 200 as of January 5th of this year. So while I will not address the flaws in the Metallic Mining Act, or I will not address what appears to be a major substantive error in the proposed rule that was not so noted, I would like to say one thing about the procedure since it just came up. This errata was not on your website. I haven't had a chance to read it. So when I talk about anything here, I am ignorant. I think that is, along with the public notice, ample time, and also the method of notification. I think this is another procedural error. I'd like to start off by thanking the department for the changes in the rules in the public hearing, especially since we are still paying for the permitted Callahan Mine Corporation site, both on our tax, federal, state, and tax dollars. Our taxpayers have a great responsibility and liability in the closing of a mine, not only in dollars, but also a liability in the persistence of toxics that can last up to 100 years. I would like to specifically address in the basis statement, number 23, support for revisions. There's a different numbering system, so I don't know if it's your 134 or 30. Your numbering system, unfortunately, is very confusing. There it states that two commenters gave support to the Chapter 200 rules. I don't know if there is humor on the part of the Department of Environmental Protection at the cost of taxpayers' dollars or if it's inattention to detail. One of those commenters, C-103, I think should be definitely struck. I know that person very well. So what you have, according to the statistics as have been brought out, you now only have one out of the 498 comments that are in support of metallic mining, which comes to 0.2008% of the comments were positive. And since that person was misquoted, I think it is only fair to state why that person was opposed in general, very briefly, to metallic mining, because the technological advancements in metallic mining in recent times still have harmful human health effects, and they continue. Look at Tar Creek and look at what happened at Rio Doce or Mount Polley. Particulate matter, again, the reason why I'm concerned about being misconstrued in number 23, because particulate matter is a very extremely toxic. Next to radioactive matter, I think both from work at UC Davis and also from University of Arizona, work with particulate matter generated from mining activities is only radioactive material is worse than that. And again, I was concerned persistently about the persistent and gratuitous mention of public's health with no specific, throughout this, public's health was mentioned, I think, 17 times, 23 times in November by word count in the November revision. And yet, we just, a recent change that the department, although they mentioned public health 23 times, the department now has no expertise in it, and the department and you are going to allow permitting of something very dangerous for which the people who wrote the rules admit they know nothing about, and yet they try to cover it. And finally, what is most troubling, again, is that, and it was stated, I think, in the September meeting, that the department, and very wisely so, is trying to streamline and minimize case-by-case decisions to have a more mechanized conveyor belt sort of permitting process for the permitting, which is good. But what about the protection of human health? Every time when you look in the rules, every time there is human health, they say, should to be determined, maybe, can be, i.e. it's not mandated. It's not mandated. Public health, the protection of public health is not mandated. It's up to the whim of the department. And like I say, Mr. Crawford stated that the Department of Protection, Environmental Protection, doesn't know public health, yet they admittedly throughout the document at least 23 times discuss protection of public health and how's that going to happen under these mining rules. And I'd like to say, is that protection? To go to the worst case scenario, several times the worst case scenario is mentioned. And when I hear worst case scenario, I think in medicine, either in the field, in the military or a civilian, I think of a major disaster threatening life, limb, vision, or neurologic status. Also, now being a selectman, I'm getting involved as all the municipalities in the state of Maine and the major industrial sites with the national incident management system. And you need to look at what they consider a worst case scenario. And the department also accepted that in the term worst case scenario. And it now looks like they didn't accept that term in a protective sense. If you go to number 2, financial insurance, page 109 or page 5, the department affirms that it considers a worst case scenario. In fact, the DEP states that it uses a worst case scenario to establish financial assurance coverage requirements. The department proposal is consistent with worst case scenarios employed by researchers in other jurisdictions. And the one example that they use of researchers in other jurisdictions in the basis statement is a 14-year-old study and this must be the best study they can come up with from the Center for Science and Public Participation, and it's a Greens Creek Mine Financial Assurance Review from June 2003. Here it is. I'm sure you all read it because it was in the basis statement. And the only problem with this worst case scenario, well, one of the major problems with the worst case scenario and the persistent and pervasive thinking of the department is when they don't even mention worst case scenario in this publication. I'm sure you all caught that. And when they didn't mention disaster, they didn't mention incident, they didn't mention health, or didn't mention citizens. What they're concerned about here is remediation costs. Now, remediation is very, very important. I don't doubt that. But is that the worst case scenario? When you think about your children and grandchildren, do you think of remediation or do you think of loss of life, limb, vision, or neurologic damage? And is that protection from the Department of Environmental Protection? Section 9I, 5, Roman numeral 2. The department, under the worst case scenario, they say requires a detailed, and I quote, detailed written cost estimate for worst case scenario. And in the details, they list what they want to hear. What is it? An environmental impact assessment. Does that involve humans? No, unless you are in an archaeological site, unless you are part of archaeology, it doesn't involve it. It involves enclosure and infrastructure, things like that. That's very important, but where is the human health protection in that? And is that protection? To go to Section 17, financial assurance and insurance requirements. There are two things I like to bring out. First of all, it was not addressed the pollution exclusion for general liability, which they asked. I'm not a lawyer calling up. Well, I'm not a lawyer, but you need to be very careful. I'm sure the Attorney General can help you on this. Pollution exclusion and general liability insurance has to be specifically mandated because it's not necessarily covered. So if you're talking about insurance and somebody decided to put insurance and general liability sudden and non-sudden in here, so let's make sure what we're talking about. It doesn't, if there's a pollution exclusion, if there's a pollution exclusion, the courts in the state of Maine basically have two cases that I could find, and it's very inconsistent how it's been determined. So I don't think there's any insurance for medical coverage. Although, like it was stated, the Department of Environmental Protection wouldn't know what medical coverage entails anyway, although they say they have it. So again, and the other thing is about financial, with insurance, not assurance, they do talk about the using the GDP deflator as an in for increase of financial insurance, not using the CPI. On average, if GDP financial deflator, which is an inflation measure, goes up about 1% a year. So yes, they are looking at how to, with the financial assurance, not insurance, how to increase the coverage by every year. That's the least amount. And they say they do it to cover equipment. So what are they protecting in financial assurance? You think they're protecting the people? They're protecting equipment. And whose equipment is that? Who's the insured party? That's a very good point. They don't have a CPI. And if you use the number to cover health, it's a national health examination by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, and there that increases 5%. So if you have over 10 years, you've already lost 50% of your health care coverage. And that brings up the next question, is insurance. And the insurance coverage for liability, which may not cover medical, is absurdly low. Again, pollution, they're not going to determine who gets the money. Is it going to go to repairing all the multi-million dollar equipment? How much does a remote controlled big cat machine that's going to be working in a pit in Bald Mountain cost? It costs about $3.7 million, even though it's going to be controlled at a control center in Canadians in New Brunswick. It's still going to cost $3.7 million to repair it here in the United States. The sudden accidental coverage is $10 million per occurrence and $20 million per aggregate. Come on. Those of you that can carry commercial insurance know for a major disaster, you're barely covered. Sudden, non-sudden insurance, which should cover chronic exposure to pollution, but you better check the pollution exclusion, is 6 and 12. It's going to cover damage, machinery, roads, cleanup, which is all important, but what about protection of the general population? Where is the protection? And when you look at the cost of Mount Polly, when you look at something different, but when you just look at the cost of lead, which is a NAAQS criteria, as you all know, and the number one producer of lead in the United States into the atmosphere is metallic mining. When you look at Flint, which is a little different, the cost of evaluation, not treatment, but the cost of evaluation for lead toxicity, just the evaluation was several thousand dollars per child. What is that protection? And again, I talked about the adjustment. There is no, it mandates a specific amount of insurance with no adjustment. So 10, 20, and 50 years is going to be far less financial coverage. Tailings. Confusion. I think all of you are confused, and I think, unfortunately, the members of the department are confused. Tailings. I called Colorado School of Mines and asked them, what's tailings? What is wet mine unit? The problem is, as Mr. Stebbins said, they're the same. And yet, when you start looking at all the definition changes they play, which I think is a major substantive change in the definitions, I'll get to that later, they're really playing a shell game. So confusing that they don't understand it, and you don't understand the difference between wet mine units and tailings. According, if you would, it is important to note, and I'm sure this can be disputed, but Colorado School of Mines, and then they sent me to tailings.com, and then I called a very nice South African engineer, includes unrecoverable and economic minerals, chemicals, and organics. That is in tailings. Tailings are exceedingly dangerous. For one example of many, well, two. One, it can have a very low pH, and secondly, it can contain arsenic. And already the state of Maine has problems with arsenic in the well water. It's very soluble. You will have arsenic and other heavy metals in solution in the tailings. So don't think that tailings are safe. And again, I really apologize for this, but it is exceedingly, I think everybody here and everybody there is confused the difference between, I don't know, they probably said, I wish we never put this in here, wet mine waste units and tailing impoundments. And when I called up the people who wrote this about worst case scenario, I asked the Center for Public Science, what is a worst case scenario in mining? And you know what they said? Tailing dam failure is a worst case scenario. And they said damage to humans is a worst case scenario, not remediation, which is important, and not making sure that the mining companies get their money back for their expensive equipment. And yet this is what the department used as their example of a worst case scenario. I think there's something wrong here. And then the problem with tailings, the change in definitions, I think you need to look at the change in definitions as a major substantive change between, and I'm not a lawyer, and with your timing of your, I have to apologize because this, I don't think the notice and over 100 pages of documents appeared not on the DEP website under rulemaking, but didn't appear under, hidden in the, obscured in the Bureau, Board of Environmental Protection until Friday afternoon, and I stayed up last night reading this. But I think that there is a very significant change between the definition of in the use of tailings, the definition of tailings and wet mine unit between one between 11-16 and 1-15. And because if you look at wet mine waste unit definition on the 16th, they include mine workings that are either partially or wholly flooded after closure. Suddenly, they put, and I think this, I don't know, this is a major substantive change, mine workings that are either partly or wholly flooded after closure are not wet mine waste units. And one of the most crucial concerns about health and safety of mining is wet mine waste units or tailings that I don't see anybody transcribing, but I believe Mr. Stibbins said they're the same. I think that's what he said. And yet you are making a major substantive change. That will affect health. They did a word shell game, trickery of words, and not a protection. And is that protection? Finally, air quality. There are comments made on air quality. And Maine is already at great risk for medical problems, with poor medical care, and specifically with heavy metals already. Mercury is a problem in the state of Maine, not only in the water, but also from the power plants in the Midwest. And arsenic in our well water has already been presented. If you are looking, I think there should be continuous emission monitoring system, and also, although it is typically applied to existing plants, and NAAQS criteria, it can be applied. There's nothing in the Clean Air Act that prohibits LEER, lowest achievable emission rates, to be applied to the toxic compounds that will be generated by mining coming out of the stacks and in fugitive emissions. And that would include lead, which if you look at the toxic release inventory from the EPA self-reported every year, mining is a leader, but also mercury and arsenic. There should be minimum, every effort should be made to reduce that. Because remember, as was said, I think in the September meeting, one of the board members of the Environmental Protection even said this could happen anywhere in the state. So it's just not going to be mining, theoretically, by these rules, just isn't going to be somewhere out in the boonies in Bald Mountain where some Native Americans are going to be. It could be next to your country club where your children and grandchildren are having an Easter egg hunt. So finally, I would like to say that the airsheds and watersheds in Maine, in regard to the airsheds and watersheds in Maine, pollution, dilution is not the solution to pollution. There are mandated protections for the permittee throughout this. Public health is mentioned, but there are no specifics. This is, you are entering into something exceedingly dangerous. And there will be stringent standards applied, as has been mentioned, but not to protect human health. So I would like to ask a rhetorical question ending. There is the Board of Environmental Protection and the Department of Environmental Protection, but I ask you, where is the protection?
Thank you. Any comments or questions?
Yeah, just one comment, and that is, just as we deal in industry with OSHA for occupational safety and health, in mining, the federal MSHA, mining safety and health, takes over where the state may not necessarily be involved, because there are federal mining safety and health issues. I can't expound on them now. I hope you've looked into that as well to see whether some of the answers you're asking to get will be given to you or not by MSHA, because that's there, and that's to watch out what's going on, not just for the machinery. They don't do the machinery necessarily. They are, part of their name is health. So mining safety and health.
I believe that applies to personnel and visitors within the mining site. It's covered by what this is covered, and you know, I guess it's fair, I don't want to take your time, I guess it's fair play to bring up the SIP, the State Implementation anyway, the SIP, the state plan, because that was also given to me in one of my, you know, one of my responses. And that really comes under, and I'm talking about is the Clean Air Act. I don't think the Mining Safety Act at least covers non-personnel who aren't in the mining area or visitors. So although there are some very good ideas, and some of those ideas, actually I was prepared for this, I should have been prepared for this. If you look at all the protective equipment that they have, which if you just happen to be next door to it and you're not in the mining area, and there's a fugitive admission, you know, you don't have the protective equipment that the respirator and the Kevlar suits provide. So I think you're right. The only problem is that degree of safety should be given to the public, and these rules do not do it.
Any further comments, questions?
Thank you.